The concept of justice will get a thorough airing today and tomorrow on the campus of Southern Oregon University. SOU is hosting its third annual Social Justice Conference. The overall theme of the conference is transcending realities. Many things will be discussed in large groups and in workshops, and one in particular intrigued us, the idea of storytelling as a tool against bias and discrimination. We brought the participants into the studio to give us some idea how storytelling can be used this way, and we understand it's the first time the whole panel's actually been together. So, three guests here. Robert Arellano is a professor at Southern Oregon University, award-winning poet and writer, and guest of the Exchange several times over. Good to see you again, Bobby.
Thanks. Good morning, Jeff.
Good to have you here. Grace Pruitt is a junior at Ashland High School and is going to be part of this panel as well. Grace, welcome.
Thank you.
And Asante Fori is a Southern Oregon University student, a fourth year, he says, not quite senior, but he is busy on campus in a number of ways. Asante, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning.
So, Robert Arellano, were you the former of the, were you involved with the formation of the actual panel?
Yeah, you know, both Grace and Asante are really active in the community when it comes to social justice. And I had been aware of this through reading their work, published work, and then meeting them around events like, well, Asante organized the Wake Up Ashland March back in the fall. And when the Social Justice Conference opportunity came around, I said, what a great chance for us to get together in the room, have someone who represents Ashland Public Schools, a junior at the high school, have an SOU student, and then myself really just as a convener and someone interested in stories to talk about what are some of the possibilities to use stories for really positive, transformative change right here in our community.
Now, when I asked the question just before we got started, Grace, he turned to you first because you've been reading your stuff in the Ashland High School paper. What have you been writing about related to justice, bias, discrimination, that general realm?
So last year around, I want to say spring, me and another student, Katie Barnard, we wrote four series on diversity and inclusion, and we just started out talking about our personal experience and her being a white female and me being a black female and how it's how we're different and how we're the same. And then we talked about the N-word and why it can and cannot be used and just different things in terms of that, and then we took photos of everyone at school, and we just showed how diverse and different our community is, and that just because you're different doesn't mean it's bad. And then the last one was a timeline of Oregon's general past, and then narrowed it down to Ashland and where we've come and how far we can go.
General past, including exclusion laws and
yes.
The Ku Klux Klan and all the things that come with Oregon's history with race relations?
Yes.
Didn't spare any punches, it sounds like.
No.
How difficult a message is that to get across, though, to high school students? I mean, I can remember being a teenager myself, and there are lots of things I'm not particularly proud of. A lot of them is blowing off other people's arguments, like, oh, come on, you'll get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that a lot as you went through this project?
Yeah, I started a racial equality club called the Change Project, and we got a whole bunch of pushback when we started it, just because angry black people in our community were like, no, like, you can't change that. That's part of our history. Like, you just have to deal with it, and people aren't going to change. And I'm like, yeah, no. So we all kind of, I got the school and the admin together, and we just basically talked about why we think that isn't true, and that we had meetings with the staff and the students, and they were like, well, we can change this, and just because a couple of people are upset doesn't mean that we can't make a difference.
Was there more upset from African Americans in Ashland than there was from the white community?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
And why do you suppose that is?
I honestly don't really know, because I feel like we should be more motivated to push past this racism. But I think a lot of people are angry because of the racism they've encountered, and they feel like they can't change that because of something someone else did to them. And I think that person has been better since then. And I think that just being around positive people and seeing how we can positively change each other, not in like, I want to change you, but I mean like make a positive change in our school at least, I think that really helped open some people's eyes.
Asante, I gather you run into this sort of thing too, in the sense that there, as people get older, sometimes I think, forget it, we just can't change. You obviously still try to change things. Talk about things like the Wake Up Ashland effort that you led.
Yeah, definitely. I always cringe a little bit when people say that I organized it, because as an organizer, we know that community mobilization is one of the key aspects to social change. And if we keep on subscribing to this model that people within a community are just extra bodies there, and that the key organizer, like a Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, is like the prime actor, and they're just organizing to have like a whole bunch of bodies behind them, that's not a really sustainable model. But I like to go from the organizing model where I, as an organizer, and me and my friends as organizers, because I did have a lot of help, help catalyze the community to mobilize behind something, and that, you know, our actions are like a key moment for a community to recognize their agency and stuff like that, and we can use that groundswell as a place to organize from more. It's like, okay, so we had this really large movement. Thank you all so much for coming there. After this, we're going to do this, and after this, we're going to do this. And or for the wider community, seeing all those people out there, we do that with the intent of, hey, we're all out here. We all recognize the same issue. And then when things like the Social Justice Conference run around, people are like keyed into that because they had this large march. And yeah, people do get a little bit more recalcitrant. And when Grace was talking about how African-Americans were kind of upset, I've grown to understand where that comes from, especially in a place like Ashland, where it's this idea of like a racial utopia, where we're surrounded by well-meaning white folk, and it's not like the South, and the Klan is not right here in your face, or at least you're told the Klan's not here in your face, because I know I see Klan members every single day here. There just really becomes, especially for African-Americans, how we're beset on all sides by like really bad racism all the time. We want to protect whatever paradise we find. So when someone's saying, oh, y'all, there are some issues on the plantation, you know, you will have African Americans, I love them dearly, that I say, there's no problems here. Like, don't bring that up. We've come from far, far worse. And like, this cop following me through the store is nothing like Ferguson. And like, I know that he's probably going to a Klan meeting later, but he's not chasing me down with a burning cross. So it's all good. But in truth, it's not, because ultimately, when you think of oppression as a conveyor belt, you know, and people are riding along that conveyor belt, if you're just standing there and you think of it as a continuum from like anti-racism to like full-on Klan activity, if you're just standing on that conveyor belt, you're eventually like moving towards the Klan side. That's the way that white supremacy works. You either need to be like actively walking back, you need to be actively like walking or sprinting backwards to actually get towards anti-racism. But because the way that white privilege works and the way that it takes agency away from white people, white silence is truly white violence, because it is condoning this massive system that works for them.
We're talking to some of the speakers from the Social Justice Conference coming to Southern Oregon University this weekend. Asante Fori is a Southern Oregon University student. Grace Pruitt is an Ashland High School student. Robert Arellano is a professor at Southern Oregon University. They'll be in a panel involving bias storytelling as the short version of it, but it's really about using storytelling to transcend bias is the hope. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Forgive me if I'm being overly literal, Asante, but when you say you see Klan members all the time, do you mean literally or just the attitudes of Klan members in the community around you?
Both. I know that this area is a hotbed for Klan activity.
Still?
Yeah, easily. A lot of my organizing friends from Black Lives Matter Portland like always tell me, it's like, Asante, we heard that there was some activity going on down there. We just want you to be safe. Want you to make sure that your friends are safe. And also Klan member like... mentality. It's like it's concomitant with white supremacy. I've kind of stopped saying the word racism because I feel like racism, we've kind of overused the term, and people don't really understand the usage of that term, don't understand how strongly it is linked to white supremacy. I say that they're synonyms. So when I do talk about these issues, I really do name white supremacy, and that gets at the whole thing. It gets at internalized racism when basically all your actions and all your ideals about yourself as a person of color are all stratified in relation to whiteness. It also talks about like shadism when, you know, amongst people of color, we discriminate against each other by basically like how close you are to whiteness, whether it's an act, deed, or even skin tone. But yeah, I think that all of this does definitely participate in within white supremacy, and I think that's, you know, the Klan's MO.
So, Bobby Arellano, how do you plan to conduct the panel tomorrow at the Justice Conference in talking about storytelling?
Sure. Well, we expect we'll have a lot of people in the room who will want to join the conversation. So, I expect each of us will start with just a few minutes of a personal anecdote, personal experience, and then we'll open it up for I'll try to moderate so that the community can engage in the conversation. Just to give an example, though, of the fact that this is an ongoing conversation, I remember during the march, which Asante helped organize.
It was a catalyst.
Exactly. There were so many stories that came out among the marchers. And even later on Facebook, it's important to acknowledge that for us, storytelling is also social media. People told anecdotes of exactly the sort of phenomenon Asante is describing. That is, folks came forward and realized that if they're being apathetic or inertia is actually not a stance that you can tenably keep anymore. You have to actually get off the conveyor belt. And that kind of conversation happened just two weeks after. I remember there was also an incident that Yik Yak, the anonymous posting site, contained some actual threats that were bias-related and that were really a nuisance. And the fact that people came together in a campus-wide conversation and started sharing stories really opened my eyes to the fact that there's legacies that are still in place here in our community that if we begin to talk about identifying that they're here, we can actually do something to change it.
When you talk about trying to get people to listen to each other's stories, though, there's the element of having people broken into groups in the first place, and high school in particular can be very cliquey, as I'm sure you know, Grace. Mm-hmm. How do you get people to even pay attention to the fact that there is a story to be told in the first place?
I think it has to come from a real and personal place. Because if people just hear a general, like, this was bad and hurt my feelings, it's like, well, I'm not going to really be invested in it unless it's something that's really, like, going to touch someone. And whether it rubs in the wrong way or it changes their life, like, I feel like you have to be able to come from a real place and not sugarcoat anything or try and make people comfortable. Because I think being uncomfortable kind of helps you be more engaged in the conversation. And I know for me, like, if I hear a story and it's, like, really outlandish, and I'm like, what? Then I will be more interested in what's going on. And, like, I don't know. It's hard to get high schoolers particularly engaged in stuff like this. But I realized that if I just am honest with people and I just show them the real issues and what it's like to be me, then I feel like I got a lot better feedback that
way. If you do get them together and telling stories, though, do they get into what high school students can do, get competitive? Well, oh, here's what happened to me, though. And, you know, kind of get to this level of raising things a bit?
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people, they can respect and understand where you're coming from. And so it's not a huge competition.
Asante, is college any less cliquish? I mean, there are lots of places where people gravitate to groups, whatever those groups may be. But I mean, do you have any greater success in college than you did in high school trying to get people to communicate across normal grouping lines?
I don't think it's necessarily an age thing. I really worry when we start to, like, codify, like, certain maturity within age ranges. I think it's really about love, and that's the strength I bring to my activism. That's why I do activism. That's why I organize. And I think that the ability to listen to a different person's story, because, like, ultimately, what really gets me is that it's all lives matter and we're all one race until I start talking about, like, that one time that someone called me the nigger. Like, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, now, we're all one people. It's like, yeah, but I had a different experience than you. And, like, if we're all one group, then, like, love should dictate that this is a story that exists within your group of people. But suddenly, like, it's alien to you. That's weird. We need to investigate that. And I think that that's what our stories try to get at, that with love, we are, like, literally one genome. We're all one, like, human species, and we need to, like, look at these stories because things have intervened. Like, there have been social factors that have intervened that have prevented us from perceiving each other as, like, family, as siblings. And with those intervening, like, partitions and walls have come, like, some really, really messed up things. And these stories really get at that in a way that, you know, exposition, like, classes really can't. So I feel like in college, no, it doesn't really change And actually, I want to say it's a little bit more difficult in college because you have, you know, the term sophomore is a real thing. It means like wise fool.
Sophomoric, yes.
Yes, exactly. You have a lot of people that because they've taken a rhetoric class or because they've taken a history class, they think that suddenly they have the qualifications to question your lived reality. And they have they suddenly have words like subjectivity and say, oh, you're not being subjective right now. And how is your story contributing to the wider peace and harmony of our community? There are more of me than there are of you. And if you just, like, remain silent like you have always, like, aren't things going to be okay there? But I find that in college it might be a little bit more difficult.
When we talk about storytelling as a tool to overcome bias and discrimination, is anything required beyond listening, Asante? Or is that, I mean, because people want to leap to action a lot of times. Well, let's change that today. Do they need to do that, or do they just need to hear the story?
Hearing is hard enough. People think that listening and holding these stories is a simple thing, but one key part of my love and my activism is that I make space for the rage of marginalized people. There are people that have been pushed to the margins for centuries, and I know that the only way that we can really achieve social change is by reaching out to the margins and bringing those people in. That's how real things happen. When you're looking at the least of these, that's when really amazing social things happen. So sitting in a room and making space for those stories, making space for the fact that this person has to think about something every single day expressly because I do not. Like, the fact that I never have to think about racism, the fact that I never have to think about will I be able to make it in and out of this building because I have a temporarily able body, because like, you know, I get perceived as a man even though I'm trans and stuff like that. I don't have to think about a lot of other things. All those things, every single second I'm not thinking about that, someone is doing all that thinking about all that thinking for me. When you have to make space and like the immediacy of that story, the immediacy of that price paid for you is in front of you, that's a very hard thing. So saying, you know, just listen is a big enough thing. After that, like if you can actually listen, then we can talk about actions. But Just worry about listening.
The Social Justice Conference is today and tomorrow at Southern Oregon University. Bobby Arellano, when's the session?
Our session will be at 12:30. It's called Telling Stories to Transform Communities. That's the midday session here in the Stevenson Union at SOU. Okay. Although things kick off today at 12:30 with registration and then a keynote address.
Okay, Bobby Arellano, Asante Forey, Grace Pruitt, thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thanks.